Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski, co-host of the show. So I need the eco-curious crew for this one. So you might want to grab your stainless steel straw, take a deep breath, and get ready to shrink that existential climate spiral down to size. So today I'm bringing on a woman who can turn the mind-melting science of Earth's carbon dance into a story even your 8-year-old inner child can vibe with. With us is Mary Trudeau. She's a professional engineer specializing in urban water infrastructure and climate adaption in urban areas. She is also the author of a children's book called A Tale of Two Planets. So today we're going to talk about what we hear about climate change, what the carbon cycle is, how we are part of it, and how, as conscious beings, we can be more conscious of it. Before I introduce her to the stage, I want to thank Spreaker and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship, and to our fans, our audience, our followers, thank you so much for being a part of The Advisor. We appreciate you. Please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. You want to stick around till the end because there's going to be amazing, amazing insights on here today. Welcome, Mary. It's really good to see you again. It's been
Thank
a long
you.
time, but we're so happy to have you back.
It's great to be here. Yeah, thank you to you and to Stacy too for this platform to talk about environment. Well, all kinds of things, but including environment.
Yeah, it's important. It's the world we live in. We're functioning in. And it's a little bit bizarre to me to think, I just remember driving on the highway. And well, I used to live in the country and I would drive to the city. It was about an hour drive in the morning and after work. And people would throw out giant bags of takeout. Like it was like they couldn't help themselves. Like, God forbid they keep it in their car and throw it out when they get home. And I just remember thinking, like, what are they thinking?
And this is part of how we behave with a lot of things without even really realizing it. Like garbage is a really good example of throwing things away, and there's actually no such place as away. Like we live on a finite planet, and if by finite I mean when you go out into space, it's only so big, right? So whatever we do here happens in that space, and compared to us, our size, it's obviously massive. But when you think of the number of people that there are, and the number of industries, and all of the, all of our needs and wants, then it does start to really add up. And if we're going to throw something out the window and think it doesn't matter, then we really that we really need to rethink that. And the thing about carbon, so we've heard about climate change and CO2, which is carbon dioxide, which is just really the chemical form of carbon in the air. We are actually throwing it around ourselves, like because gas, when you put gas in your car, most of that is it's a liquid, but it's also carbon. And so when we burn it, it's throwing carbon into the air. It's like when if you think of a tree has a whole lot of water, but it also has a lot of carbon. Like carbon, the molecule, carbon is an element. It's just something that was created when the universe was created. And if you remember the periodic table from science, if you weren't half asleep, that's a list of all of the elements. So carbon is one, hydrogen is one, oxygen is an element. Like it's like the building blocks of the planet, and they're made up of atoms and electrons and protons. So carbon is an element, and it builds trees, it builds people, it builds food. It's in fossil fuels, so those used to be plants in the planet, and the atmosphere took the carbon out of the air to build a plant. The plant died, and then it got just over time, soil built up over it. And so what's called fossil fuels are fossil plants that are no longer plants. They're now just liquid carbon, basically. So when we put it into our gas tank, we are putting carbon into the air. And when you look at how much carbon was in the air before we started burning fossil fuels and how much is in now, there's quite a big difference. But when you look at the whole atmosphere, a lot of people say, well, it's only just a little bit of carbon. Look, you know, it's like when you look at how much oxygen is in the air, how much nitrogen is in the air, all these other things, there's actually not that much carbon. But, you know, if you think of a little piece of dirt in a ball bearing, like something, you know, your bicycle wheel, and it starts to squeak, it doesn't take very much for it to start to squeak
No.
or break down, right? So we've thrown off that the balance of how much carbon can be taken up by trees and by the ocean. The ocean is taking up carbon. But if we think of trees, that's why people talk about planting trees for climate change, because the trees are made out of carbon. And so the fancy word is sequester. They sequester just means hold on to. They pull the carbon out of the air to make leaves and trunks, and the bigger they grow, the more carbon they need. And this is why more mature trees, like old growth forests, are called carbon sinks, because it can pull so much carbon out of the air. It's like carbon going down the drain of a sink. It's like the forest is pulling that carbon, so that it literally is making trees with it. So if we cut down trees, burn trees, burn oil, burn anything really made out of carbon, then we're throwing the carbon back into the air. And so that's why there's this thing called a carbon cycle, because carbon naturally, like trees release carbon dioxide, part of their cycle. They pull in carbon, but they also breathe, like we breathe out carbon dioxide. So carbon goes into the air, but it comes out of the air by growing trees, humans, plants. And that's why it's called a cycle. It goes up in the air, but it also comes back in to plants and other things that grow. Anything, pretty well anything that grows on the planet is growing because it has access to carbon. Carbon and water are the two big things. So you can see why it's called a cycle. It's taken in, it goes out. It's taken in, it goes out. And because we've burned so many fossil fuels, we've put way more into the air than the trees and other things that are growing can take out. And so we have this imbalance.
As you're speaking, all I'm thinking is how much more powerful are the things that we cannot see than we can even imagine. You know, it's humans get caught up in this idea of the material world and the things we can see. And if we can't see it, how can it be affecting us that badly, right? And it's really interesting to me to talk about this and to really emphasize the importance of protecting our planet and honoring these cycles.
Yeah, and there's so many cycles. Like we talk about the water cycle, you know, and
Last time, yeah.
everybody knows that water goes up into the air and comes back down as rain. It's the same with a lot of nutrients, like things that you put on plants to grow. Farmers put on nutrients, and not all of them go into the air, but they all cycle, because like phosphorus is one of it's a nutrient. Again, it's an element. It's just one of the building blocks, and it's in plants need it to grow, which is why it's in fertilizer. And once the plant dies or is consumed and, you know, excreted, then the phosphorus, that's an element. It's not really, you know, changing drastically. There's different forms, but basically it's there, and so it will eventually become compacted into rocks if it's under a lake. So then erosion will release phosphorus again because it's eroding the rock. So it goes back into whatever plants take it up. Nitrogen is the same thing. There's all of these cycles that run the planet, and we're part of that those cycles because we eat things. We grow, we take nutrients to grow.
Yeah, I
And
was just going to ask you. We're a part of it. And so I think this is a great time to kind of pivot and talk about how we can be more conscious of it. What are we doing? How are we participating? What can we do?
And so, we think of climate change as a really heavy topic, and it is. It's a very serious, heavy topic, but we can have fun participating in changing some of the way we operate so that it is actually climate friendly. So, for example, food is one of our big, big, let's call it impacts, where we grow food and, well, we farmers grow food for us, and most of us buy the food at a grocery store. One of the things we can do is really celebrate food in season. So, where I live right now, strawberries are in season, and they're fabulous. They grow locally. Local farmers sell them. And there used to be, before we had global trade and mass transit for food products, there used to be strawberry socials where people would get together in the community and really celebrate, hey, the strawberries are here and they're delicious and they're beautiful and I'm meeting my neighbors and we can put whipping cream on them or whatever. And it was a celebration. So it was social, it was recognizing that these things are quite rare in terms of how often they're available. And if we honor the cycle of nature, then, a strawberry in February that's been put on a truck or a plane or somewhere and flown, who knows how many thousands of miles, and is picked before it's ripe, so it's not actually that good usually. If we change our habits to buy fewer of those things out of season and really honor them when they're in season, then that it reduces the carbon footprint because you're buying something that's local and it's in season, and you're celebrating it. So I don't know what your favorite local seasonal fruit or vegetable is. Does one come to mind?
Yeah, my God. I went to Vancouver and I feel like I finally had fruit that was fresh. It was right off the tree. Winnipeg, Manitoba, I mean, we have strawberries, we have wild blueberries, so I love those, raspberries. But having like a fresh mango or something, it was mango or apricot. I remember it being like the best candy ever. I was like, oh my God, this is what it actually is supposed to taste like. This is what fresh fruit picked from the tree tastes like. It was so good. What is your favorite?
Well, strawberries, I love asparagus too. It's not a fruit, but when it first comes up, that it's really tender. And not too far from here we can get well, apples, like a really good Macintosh apple grown in Ontario, apricots as well, peaches. Actually, I think peaches are my favorite. Peach season is I think mid-August. And I live on peaches. It's peach season.
They
And
taste so much different when they're fresh, that's for sure. And that really kind of you tied a loop for me because I didn't really look at it like that. We go to the grocery store, we see all of these things on display. You buy something out of season and it doesn't taste that good. I don't think of where it's coming from, how it's getting there, why is it here if it's not in season, and now that's bringing that all together for me, and that makes So much sense. Yeah, man, tell us more.
Well, growing things, as I mentioned, take up carbon, right? So planting, even if you don't have room to plant a tree, even if you have a balcony, if you're in an apartment, you have a balcony, tomato plants in the summer off your balcony, even the little cherry tomatoes, they are really good
So
when
good.
they're fresh. And they're sequestering carbon, like the leaves, the tomatoes, they are taking up carbon. And if if you do have a garden, or there's a community garden, or even a park that has a tree planting things during growing season, especially native plants. So I have milkweed in my backyard, and it was actually banned from urban areas. Well, banned from being grown because it makes life difficult for farmers, because
What is milkweed?
it's a tall plant that has, when it flowers, it has this actually really nice pink ball on it, but it's the only habitat monarch butterflies can use for their eggs. And monarch butterflies fly from like north in Canada all the way down to Central America, like Mexico. I don't know if they go as far as Central America, but they basically fly the length of North America, and they overwinter in Mexico, and then they come back to Canada and north parts of Canada to lay their eggs, and then they go back. I mean, they're the most astonishing thing. Like this
They're so
insect,
beautiful.
they're amazing. And because their habitat was illegal, until people realized how much trouble they were in, there's not that much milkweed around for them to use. So, you can, like, if you're in the area where monarch butterflies come through, then you can find milkweed in like a local, like a plant store or whatever they'll have.
And then
And
plant them or have them nearby so that we can save the butterfly population.
yeah, and they do grow. Like once they start to grow, they will be a little bit aggressive. Like they'll grow where they want to grow. And my garden, my objective for my garden is to have birds, butterflies, bees, and different insects really be happy in my garden. And it's beautiful. Like I get a lot out of it, but it's mostly native plants, and it's just, I love when the butterflies come through, and rest on the milkweed. I'm out there trying to take pictures without destroying them or disturbing them, I mean.
So beautiful. So can you give us some tips on how to be more conscious, how to live more consciously every day? Little steps we can take to be more aware of these cycles in our world that we live on. How can we honor it better? How can we treat it with more respect? Some of us are just unaware of what we're doing and how it's harming. So what would be some simple ways that we can help our planet?
Well, I think the most simple thing is to notice beauty. And I mean, you can step out your door or just look out your window and just notice like the leaves on a tree, a little bird. It doesn't have to be a fancy bird. It's like birds are amazing. And if we give space in our consciousness for just how incredibly beautiful the nature that we can see, even in the most intensely urban city, you can see a tree or a grass, even things that aren't really native. Like if you look at a blade of grass and you think of how it's growing in the roots, it just gives a little bit of space for more wonder and appreciation to enter. And it just grows. And I think that is really the first step in becoming more climate aware, because or earth aware, because you really appreciate it. Like, your body feels how beautiful it is. And then you do care if you are reaching for, the local strawberries or something, not native. And I mean, we live in a winter climate. I mean, you always need a little bit of a balance. I'm not going to eat turnip all winter, because they keep. But really, I am conscious about how far something like there's South African fruit, which I'm sure is amazing, but it's just come too far for me to buy it. So that's the first thing, just to appreciate beauty, be aware, and to celebrate. Like, if you celebrate local strawberries, you don't have to talk to people about climate change. You're just celebrating something local and spreading the word about how amazing this local resource is. I mean, then there's planting native plants, and alternative transportation, always, like walking, cycling, public transport, is all part of the whole package of reducing how much carbon we throw into the air. And talking to kids about
Yes, the education piece, educating our little ones so that they can educate more little ones, and they're the future of this planet.
And in my book, like, it's not a heavy message. The message is, wow, we live on the most incredible planet. And if we really appreciate how incredible it is, we just want to take care of it. It's not a burden. It's not, doom and gloom. It's like, wow, it's literally a magic planet.
Yeah,
And
you wrote A Tale of Two Planets, and it's a children's book, and that's what Mary's referring to right now. It's so cute. It's just so easy to read, and that's a brilliant tool for kids to use to learn more about the planet. Sorry, I had to tell the audience to give them some context, and I want them to look it up because it is a simple thing that they can provide their kids and, students to learn about this stuff. So please continue.
Yeah, thanks for that. And so for people who want to get, more active, there's writing to politicians, emails, tagging them on social media. This is important to me. It doesn't have to be, a paper letter that you mail off. It can be just constant reminders that climate change is important. And the other thing, you mentioned that I specialize in water. Like, climate change is also changing the water cycle. So they're both cycles, and because the air is warmer, it holds more water. If you think of how much, if you try to dry like a sheet outside when it's 2 or 3 degrees above freezing, compared to a hot summer day, it just dries so much faster on a hot summer day. And that's because the water in whatever you've washed will go into the air just really quickly. And so with the warmer air, we have more water in the atmosphere, and that's why we hear about more intense hurricanes, because there's more water, there's more energy, basically. Deluges, these massive storms, they call it like a 100-year storm, becomes more frequent because that's a storm that statistically would occur once every 100 years. It doesn't mean that it wouldn't have before climate change happened, 2 years in a row, but just statistically, you could kind of say, well, We wouldn't get something that intense very often. Whereas now we're getting really intense storms more often, and it's because of the change in the carbon cycle that has changed the water cycle, and the change in the carbon cycle has increased
Our
the
planet sees a lot of consistency with like what people perceive climate change as, but then we go through phases of ice age, you know? So can you explain why that might be happening? What is your perception of that?
Right. So there's actually three different things, three different cycles, and one's on about 100,000 years. One is like, I think it's 40,000 years, and one's 20,000. Like, I might have the numbers wrong, but they're really, really long cycles. And one of them is how close the Earth is to the sun. Like, we're not. There's some times when we're going around the sun that we're actually farther away for a long period of time than other times. And then there's the tilt of the Earth changes slightly. I think that one's the 20,000 years. And so when it's tilted away, it tends to be colder. And then the other one is the wobble, like the way the Earth turns on its axis has a wobble. So they're all at different timelines, and sometimes they all converge together, so you tend to get cold, and then they converge the other way and you tend to get hot. So in the past there have been ice ages, and these cycles kind of all converge. The Earth is farther away, and the wobble is one way, and the tilt is, tilting away from the Earth. So if we look at those three cycles, right now Earth should be in a cooling phase. We should actually be cooling, and we know that we're not. So it's true that it is natural for warming and cooling. Like, yeah, go back 100,000 years, a million years, whatever, there's these cycles. But right now we're off track with the way those cycles worked in the past, and we're off track because we're insulating our planet with carbon. It's like a, if you can have a really cold day, open your car door. If it's sunny, get in the car, and it's hot because the sunlight's been trapped in the car. It's come in the window, but it's been trapped in the car. That's essentially what the carbon that we're putting into the air is acting like, a car or a blanket holding in the heat from the sun. And so we see a departure from that, those
The
natural
norm.
cycles. Yeah.
Tell us about more of what you do so the audience knows where they can find you and your book and any type of services.
Great. Yeah. So I do environmental policy and program advice through my consulting company, which is Envirings, Envirings. My book, though, is Mary Trudeau Books, is on Instagram, and that's the main thing. I also there's the book has a website, A Tale of Two Planets, and two is TWO, not the number, ataleoftwoplanets.com.
Beautiful, beautiful. So before we wrap up, what is a few last minute things you want to leave the audience with today?
Have fun on our planet. Like take care of it, but also have fun, enjoy it, and just be conscious about what you do on the planet, what you consume, how you consume it, how you get around. Without it's not a big guilt trip. It's like, wow, like let's really, really appreciate what we have here because it's incredible.
I agree. We need to celebrate it and give thanks. It
Yeah.
is such an honor and blessing to be able to, thrive on this planet, and we have to protect it. So thank you so much for giving us some insight into how we can do little things to protect it and to save it so that our little ones can thrive and grow. And it was so good to see you again. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks a lot, Lisa. It's great to see you too. Thanks for the conversation.
Yes. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. You heard from Mary Trudeau on the importance of the carbon cycle, and feel free to leave any comments or questions for her in the show notes, and we'll be for sure to get them to her. Her book is called Tale of Two Planets, and as mentioned, she can be found on Instagram, and we will link that in the show notes for you as well. Until next time, guys, my name is Lisa Urbanski with The Advisor. Go enjoy some of those summer strawberries. And if you're somewhere cold, perhaps have a really fresh potato. I don't know. Bye for now.